Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 10 Bagger Podcast. It's 10 Bagger Tuesday, and for episode number 15, I am speaking with James Quantas. He is the editor of Resource Opportunities. You can find that at resourceopportunities.com. James, thanks so much for coming on. And my first question for you is, when you think of the term 10 Bagger, what pops into your head?
Oh, the ones that got away. Actually, like patience, actually, you know, pops into my head because, you know, that's one of the hardest parts of this game is having the, you know, fortitude to see something through to a 10 bagger. I mean, we're into a different kind of market now, particularly in gold. But, you know, like a lot of peaks and valleys in a typical 10 bagger.
So as far as patience, my follow-up would be, so you have to be patient for a lot of these 10 baggers to play out, but how can you differentiate between the things that you're being patient with that have a really good chance to play out versus the things that you're being patient with that they just don't pan out or they have a low chance of panning out? I know it's really hard. You know, we'd all be a lot richer if we knew how to do that, but do you have any thought as to how you can differentiate between, like, this is, it's good to have patience with a certain company and this other thing is a waste of patience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's tricky, isn't it? I mean, you know, obviously management teams are so important. Everybody says that, right? But, you know, if it's a good, you know, very solid management team, then I'm more comfortable and backers for a company. You know, then I'm more likely to not lose patience. And, you know, obviously it's hard when other things are moving, right? But often, you know, often if you give up and, you know, move money into something that is moving harder, typically like the other one will, Murphy's Law, but the other one will start to move and, and there you go.
So can you share with us a 10 bagger that you did pick and you invested in and made money on versus one that got away? Like, what are the top ones that examples that come to mind for you?
I guess the top one that comes to mind would be NextGen Energy, which is a uranium developer in the Athabasca Basin. You know, so when I took over the newsletter from Lawrence Rolston, who had it prior to me, I think he started writing about NextGen at 30 cents, and it was at 40, low 40s or 45 cents when I started writing about it. You know, incredible high grade discovery, and the Arrow deposit just kept growing and growing. So that was, you know, a rocket ship, but then of course we're into and that was in a bad uranium market. And so that's picking up now, but I forget what the high was. I think it was like a high, mid to high fours. On that one, of course, it bottomed out well below a dollar not long ago, and now is picking up again. So again, I you know, my approach was to, you know, I sold some of it, but I held on to a core position just because of the quality of the deposit.
So along the way, like, was there a point along the way that you realized that this could be a 10 bagger? Like, this had real potential to be a multi bagger. I mean, was it after the discovery was made, or just take us back through the history and kind of how that evolved and at what point it became clear, like, this thing could, you know, this has serious upside potential left.
Yeah. I think it was just the, those early, drill results at Arrow were like almost ridiculous grades, right? Especially if you know, I'm not a fan of this, but if you put them into terms of gold, like just multiples of, forget about like the average uranium deposit being mined globally, but, you know, within the Athabasca Basin, which is very high grade uranium, I mean, NextGen's results were multiples of that. And they just, you know, they just sort of kept hitting these incredible holes in proving up the deposit.
So tell me about a 10-bagger that got away.
I mean, one that comes to mind, and you know, I don't know if it's a 10-bagger, but I was quite early on West Haven Ventures, right? Gren Thomas's exploration company, high-grade gold discovery. You know, so I was covering that before their big discovery, just because I liked the team, good share structure, great infrastructure, and I liked how they ran the company. But at a certain point, I did kind of ran out of patience on that one, and pulled the plug on it. You know, the programs they were doing were quite small and so on. And then they pull out this amazing discovery hole. You know, so on that one, I was, you know, I was so quite familiar with the project and hadn't sort of stopped covering it for out of any fatal flaw. You know, so I sent out a flash alert and have been covering it ever since. But it sort of goes to... it kind of goes to show you how tricky this this game is, right? You can have so many of the boxes ticked, or you can have other ones that don't have boxes ticked, but they find some, you know, the stock moves.
And what you're saying about patience, it's really true, because it, people who are new to the sector, they might just assume that a lot of these discoveries, they're like on the first couple drill holes. And some of these things, I mean, yeah, they can never hit anything for like 5 years. And you naturally, you're just going to get tired of it. You know, time, mm-hmm. value, cost of money, whatever that's called. And, yeah. You know, then you move on to something else. And suddenly that company, that then they hit the discovery, which you were looking for and you thought could happen when you invested it in it in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of exactly what happened to me with West Haven.
Now, let me ask you about this, because this is something I've talked about in other episodes, but the pre-discovery and versus post-discovery, and I think you focus, you know, mostly on exploration, so you're probably a good person to ask on this. What are your views on pre-discovery plays versus post-discovery plays?
I mean, if you're gonna play in pre-discovery plays, man, you really got to take like a scattergun, call it a scattergun approach, or invest like in a lot of these things, right? Because they really are lottery tickets. So you know, if you're gonna do that, you know, like share structure is so important, especially through this bear. You know, less so now, but through this bear market, like. You know, I've covered a lot of, or sort of followed a lot of companies that started out with great team, you know, pretty tight share structure, and raising money at these depressed valuations. Like the share structure, it takes no time at all, especially if you're raising with warrants, which most of them have to, for the share structure just to be obliterated. So pre-discovery, I'd say, like, you got to spread that around, right? And hopefully some of them work out. Post-discovery, you know, obviously some of that risk has been removed, and you know you're going to pay a higher price for it, but you could still get some pretty incredible returns. You know, especially when there's you know, like liquidity events or washouts, like we saw in March, when you know the money just was sucked out of the sector and everything sort of fell across the board, regardless of the quality of the projects. So just having dry powder as well is so important. But that's another one that I've been caught caught off guard not having enough dry powder.
Yeah. So let's talk about criteria, and I want to separate, because I think there's probably a little bit different criteria for pre-discovery versus post-discovery. Okay. So for pre-discovery, you said you have to take a scattergun type approach. Is there any way you can narrow that down, as far as criteria?
What I mean by that is just not putting too many eggs in one, like not buying huge positions in like a pre-discovery play, right?
Right. Let me step back for. I'm sorry because I wasn't clear. Sure. When you're figuring out which of those, because it's like you're shooting bullets at all these things. When you're figuring out which ones to shoot at, which of the whole bundle that you're going to invest in.
Right.
I mean, let's say you have a list of like 20 and you want to narrow it down to like 7 or 8 companies. What criteria would you use to narrow down that list?
Hmm. Well, I'm a contrarian at heart, so. Ones that tick sort of those boxes, project management, team share structure, kind of whether I like the people running the company, it kind of boils down to that on some level. Ones that tick those boxes and that haven't moved yet. Like even in this gold bull market where things are starting to move and some, particularly up market, but even like some, high quality exploration plays are moving. So I'm more likely to, identify ones that haven't moved or say like in base metals or copper, companies that have like, maybe they even have a resource, maybe even a large, high grade resource, but they're being priced, the same as a pre-discovery gold play is right now. So price, I guess in answer to your question, price matters, right? Price of entry. It's one of the few things we can control when we're investing in this sector.
Yes, price and value. So as far as post-discovery, I mean, obviously we want to look for things that still have the growth potential of a discovery, but what other things would you look at when you're looking at post-discovery to narrow down the list of companies that you're researching?
Well, you need like a strong technical team, but also finance guys, right? Post-discovery, a lot of it comes down to what the valuation is. Like in this market, I think there are, your podcast is called 10 Beggars Podcast. Like, I do think there are developers and good developers, like high quality, where I like the management team and I think they have a really good project, that could be 10 beggars in this kind of market that we're heading into. So in some ways, there's a certain risk with developers as well, but I guess if you can get a developer that you think has a realistic shot at a 10 bagger, why would you invest in a pre or post discovery exploration play if the price is right, like on the developer side?
To follow up on that with developers, I mean, do you make the assumption that the developer has to go into, they have to build the mine, go into production, and because it's so profitable to do that, that's how it's going to become a 10 bagger? Or could they possibly, the stock could just go crazy before they build the mine and somebody buys them out for some, $1 billion or whatever? Like, how do you arrive at a 10 bagger for developer? Do you have a, do you
yeah,
focus
I mean,
on one of the, one of the two or both?
No, but like, I like to, I think it's important to focus on developers that have the bandwidth and the team to build the mine if that's going to be the outcome. And have they, have they built mines before? Like, I covered a couple gold developers. And in both cases, the CEOs, they're both in Canada. In both cases, the CEOs have actually built mines prior, and have a team in place. So you can't, you can't just assume that you got this great project, you're going to drill the heck out of it, and somebody's going to come along and take you out. You really do need to realistically move it down the path to, even if that's your desired outcome, you gotta move it down the path towards development.
Right.
Like, and have a realistic, And not just to say it, but to, you know, have the team in place and the financing, bandwidth, and, you know, sort of the ingredients that a person looking at it, you know, with fresh eyes would say, oh, you know, I can see the path to them building a mine.
Right. Now, you touched on other commodities. You know, uranium looks to be perking up. I haven't really been following copper, base metals. You know, in my opinion, it still might be too early to look at those. But I like what you said, because it was something I've been thinking about, that, you know, given in March, you know, how cheap certain high-quality gold companies got, you know, we haven't, that's probably, relatively speaking, you know, still the case in copper and some other sub-industries for commodities. So what, are you following other commodities, and do you see a lot more opportunity there as far as value and potential over the next couple of years?
I mean, it's hard to say how, you know, I mean, I think economically, you know, we're obviously in a lot of trouble, and it's going to look more like a depression than a recession in a lot of ways. So it's hard to say how the stimulus and I don't know if governments are going to like take the opportunity to you know, put these huge infrastructure projects and renewals, which should, you know, light a fire under the base metals. But I'm kind of going on the assumption that a base metals recovery could be a ways away. So I am focusing more on the gold names. But, you know, like in March, I did pick away at a couple of companies that I like. One was like a new position in a sort of an exploration development company, Base Metals, added to that. And then I also a Base Metals royalty company. That was a new position for me. You know, and obviously, you know, the royalty company hasn't, you know, it's picked up a little bit, but I was early on that. So it went down more, and it's picked up a little bit, but that's a long-term, you know, like that's a long-term play, solid company. I'm pretty comfortable with sitting on that, even if it doesn't give me the gains that a lot of the gold plays on the gold side will. If that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that when there is some kind of economic recovery, I think all commodities will do really well. But the question really is, you know, the timing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the same within gold, right? I mean, you know, in March, you know, I put a couple of newsletters out and you know, during that sort of the period of sort of these washouts where money was just like came out of the sector kind of indiscriminately, what I bought and what I focused on were companies that ordinarily I wouldn't particularly in the newsletter, you know, like royalty companies, larger developers. I bought like a silver development company that had a pretty high market cap already, as far, you know, from my perspective. But you know, I just did it because the price was right. Like it came off so much that you just knew it wasn't going to stay down there for long. And for, you know, for some, in that case, for some of the silver exposure as well. So yeah, like, I mean, we're seeing it with the producers and the, some of the royalty companies have moved hard, and so it'll trickle down to the, exploration companies, but it could still take a while.
So
or it could happen really quickly.
Yeah. So to follow up on that, for gold exploration companies in general, you haven't seen any like a material benefit yet to this, the rebound that we've had. I mean, I know the advanced ones have probably, I mean, they've seen a huge rebound, but I guess the smaller plays, you know, those early stage things where we're looking for 10 baggers, have things really changed for those types of companies in the last couple months?
I mean, the short answer really, and there are exceptions, is no. You know, you see a lot of the money flow into, you know, companies like Great Bear or I mean, that's one that comes to mind, but there's other, Wallbridge and Irving. you've seen a lot of the money flows into these ones that are, that have really rocketed. But I think for the typical gold exploration company, even a you know, like a fairly solid gold exploration company, the valuations are still pretty depressed. Some of them, you know, managed to raise money during, you know, some pretty tight financing windows. But for a lot of those, especially given that we're at, you know, we're at 1700 US, and, you know, for companies that have projects in Canada, a much higher gold price, you know, across the sector, I think, you know, the prices are very undervalued still. And I do think we're heading into the kind of market where, you know, the challenge will be holding on to, instead of figuring out how, you know, at what point do I cut my losses, which is what we've been through for several years with a brief interlude in 2016. You know, the challenge will be like having the fortitude to hang on, because these things are going to go higher than people are going to believe, frankly, at a certain point.
Yes. Now, with that said, can you share a stock pick that has the potential to go higher than we believe, a potential 10-bagger?
Sure, yeah. So one that I've been focusing on and buying is Talisker Resources. You know, they have backing. It's guys from Osisko who drilled out the Barkerville gold. And it's also the exploration team from Anglo American in South America. They found a couple of multi-million ounce deposits down there. So very strong technically. So they were on my radar because they staked a huge tract of land in the Spences Bridge Gold Belt where West Haven operates. And those two companies have done sort of an agreement as well. So they were on my radar, but I hadn't sort of pulled the trigger on them. That's still pretty early stage exploration, what they're doing there. But then they picked up... a gold, basically a historic mine, technically three mines, that produced, you know, 4.2 million ounces of gold at grades of 17 grams per ton back starting in the 30s and running all the way to the 70s, I believe. So it's called Braylorn. It's a historic project that was in another junior that was having trouble advancing the project. So it was kind of already, I'd actually toured it under the prior company, and my son and I go up there and camp every year. It's about 4 hours outside of Vancouver. So I was quite familiar with the asset. And when I heard that Talisker was picking it up, you know, for a pretty good price, that's when I pulled the trigger and bought Talisker. I like the team. I like that asset. It's a very, the mineralization is quite consistent there, which is unusual for a high grade vein deposit. I like the fact that they raise money without warrants. They've done a few of those. And it's basically a serious team. So it ran pretty hard. But interestingly, when they picked up Braylorn, the stock didn't do anything for, I think, 2 or 3 days. The stock didn't move at all on that news. And it, sort of at a certain point, it picked up traction. I think it hit 60 cents and then came down hard with everything else. But it hasn't really rebounded yet. I think it's still trading under 40 cents. So I think that one has a long ways to go on the upside. I like about them the fact that it's exploration in the Spences Bridge Gold Belt. But then, you know, the Braylorn is a brownfields deposit. So it's more a case of, in some ways, identifying the gold that they're fairly certain is there as opposed to straight exploration. So that one's TSK. They trade on the Canadian Stock Securities Exchange.
All righty. Well, thank you for that, James. And before I let you go, anything else that you want to mention that we didn't cover already?
Nothing comes to mind, Jordan. That was a good conversation.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we covered it all. And, so resourceopportunities.com, any other contact info you want to give out?
Yeah. I mean, I'm active on CEO.ca under my own name. So you can contact me there as well. There's also on my profile on CEO.ca, there's a discount for the subscription.
All righty. Well, James, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate
it. It was fun. Yeah, thanks for having me, Jordan.
And hopefully we can have you back again in the months ahead and talk more about 10 baggers and exploration.
Yeah, that sounds good.